Warning, do not listen to this podcast if hearing about freedom and liberty is not legal for you in your community. And if so, you should immediately move to a hipper community.
Welcome to the Freedom Fiends Podcast, where Michael W. Dean and Nima Vedati cover the punk rockinist, hip-hopinist current events, as well as timeless universal truths about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, because there's no such thing as half-free. The Freedom Fiends Podcast, available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Freedom Fiends is proudly syndicated by Alterati.com and the Liberty Radio Network.
Welcome to the Freedom Fiends Distance Learning Anarchy Series with Freedom Fiends Michael W. Dean.
Broadcasting from my windowless bunker.
And Nima Vedati.
Go, go, Freedom Fiends!
Nima Vedati, how you doing?
Yo, it's me, Nima V. I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Good. What have we been doing today?
We've spent all day troubleshooting audio gear, man. You've got all this expensive equipment. You've got the Knobtron 9000 over there, or as you call it, the mixer of 1,000 knobs.
But
it's going into your computer with an iPod cable that teenage girls carry in their purse.
We're going to take the $300 we have in the Fiends Fund, and we're going to ask for more because we might need another 100 or so, but gosh, we're sick of this. But we got radio coming up for sure. We mean it this time. And we're going to have to buy
We can say the name of the company now, and we can say the date.
Yep. So we're going to buy a cheap desktop computer, Windows 7, with like 4 gigs of RAM or some, or 8 gigs of RAM. And buy a $100 digital breakout box sound card with balanced inputs instead of the little teenage girl iPod inputs, you know. And it's going to solve all our problems, and we're going to sound great and be wonderful. This time,
yes, so
we mean it. Yeah. The thing about radio, okay, we're on Genesis Communications Network starting the second or third weekend in April.
Yeah.
And we're syndicated. That's the same people that syndicate Free Talk Live and Alex Jones. And then we have to get on stations, but we will get on stations, and I feel a relief. I still feel like, ugh, another month, but hey, it's like, I feel like we've been sitting in the doctor's waiting room for 4 hours, and now the nurse has come and taken us into the exam room and said, take off your clothes. You know, you feel like you're almost on the way there at that point.
It's always my favorite part, going to the doctor's office.
Taking off your clothes?
Actually, no, I don't go to the doctor's office, so I don't even remember.
Yeah, your healthcare plan is living, clean living, man.
Clean living, yeah, you got it.
So, radio.
Radio, and because of that, all that trouble. We'll have a little bit shorter cast, but maybe it'll be poppier and better.
Yep. I'm selling my old mixer, by the way, for $100 postpaid. It's a USB Alesis mixer. Unfortunately, it only works with Windows XP and older versions of Mac, and today is March 12th, so if it's not too long after that, I have it for sale for $100 postpaid to anywhere in the United States, and can ship to Canada if you pay a little extra, and it's a piece of Fiends history. We did like Fiends episode, you know, 10 through 183 on it, and I also mixed the Right Arm Wyoming CD on it, so it's a piece of history, and it still works. If you're a podcaster, if you're a radio person, if you want to do something like that, it's a good deal.
And we also, the music we made for Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom, the original music we made with that mixer, didn't we?
Yeah. I just used my mute button. There's a mute button on the Knobtron 9000.
Oh,
I coughed,
really?
And no one heard
Who would have thought?
Yeah.
Okay, good times.
So we might actually sound a little worse today than usual, not better, but we kind of had to jerry-rig things to get everything working. It's not because of the wonderful equipment we have. It's because of the lacking of the ability to interface with this brand new equipment with my really old, crappy laptop. So that's going to get gone. It's going to get gone, man.
Some gear needs are just like snowballing. Every time we get a new piece, it's like, I need that next piece.
We're three pieces of gear away from perfection.
always. Yeah.
Sort of like status are always three laws from perfection.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, us buying gear doesn't hurt anybody. That's the main difference.
Right.
Laws hurt
right.
everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody.
Mark asks, will there be or should there be an internet feed to hear the live show like you have on Thursday or Sunday? Yes, there will. The GCN has a streaming feed, and we'll announce that when it's time. Our show is going to be Saturdays and Sundays from noon to 2 every week at Central Time. And that's going to mean Michael's going to have to get up. Me, I'm going to have to get up a little earlier than usual. But I'll make that sacrifice for you, Nima.
Well, I mean, you'll make that sacrifice for radio.
Radio.
I mean, think about all the other sacrifices you've made for the radio. So, yeah. That's nothing. I mean, you should.
Well, it's a sacrifice for you.
To say you should.
It's
like
a sacrifice for you because you want to be able to have your late afternoons on the weekends free to go DJ at Fat Greek weddings and make fat stacks and be able to quit bringing fat pies to fat people like me.
And skinny Turkish weddings, too, not just the fat Greek ones.
Yeah, I think I still have some effect on here. All right, I turn it off.
Still a little bit wet.
Lou said the Knobtron 9000 has more knobs than a strip club.
Wrong kind of strip club.
Yeah.
I guess not. I don't know what the ratios work out between a male strip club and a female strip club. Maybe they're about the same.
I'm going to pigeon you something that somebody said to us that was like the coolest compliment we've ever gotten, man. It was awesome.
Okay. This is, I will read it. Oh, yeah, I read this. This was great. This made me feel good in my cockles of my heart. Matt wrote, "Punk's not dead." You know, in the 80s and 90s, I kept wondering who would take their punk authenticity and outrage to another level. For a while, I thought it would be Rollins with his spoken word and TV shows. I waited for Jell-O a long, long time. But really, those guys and many others squandered their rage in righteous political contravention. MWD and NV, you are the moral, authentic, and relevant punk legacy I think a lot of folks have been waiting for. And to GCN, who again demonstrates maverick vision, kudos.
That's awesome, man. That's,
yeah.
Man, I want that, like, embroidered on the back of a punk rock leather jacket. I'd wear it everywhere.
Right. Not bumper sticker length, but, man, does it pack a punch.
Punk's not dead. It just morphed into the Freedom Fiends. That would almost fit on a bumper sticker.
That would fit on. Yeah.
And speaking of punk rock, we had a comment from someone who said that it was Matt. It was the same guy, I think. Said, as a former Cito rat, which is Montecito, California, he said, this is a correction from my cast with Ben. I was talking about the band RKL, Rich Kids on LSD. And I said they're a San Francisco band. And he pointed out, they're not from San Francisco. They were from trendy Montecito, California, which is a rich community near Santa Barbara. I said, good point, but they were in San Francisco much. It seemed like they were a San Francisco band, and they moved there, actually, and presented themselves as a Frisco band, as a San Francisco band when booking. Yeah. You know, like, if they were playing in Toledo, it said, tonight, from San Francisco, RKL. It didn't say from Montecito, which no one outside of SoCal's heard of.
Right. Well, when people think of UGK, Underground Kings, Pimp C, and Bun B, they're from Port Arthur, Texas. But if you tell somebody Port Arthur, Texas, they're not going to understand what you're talking about.
So where do they say they're from?
They're H-Town rappers. You think of the Houston scene, you think of them, even though they're from 2 miles east, you know.
Yeah, and I think of you as from Austin, but, you know, you were born in Salt Lake City. That doesn't sound as cool, though. And you really didn't
but that's what I tell people. When people see my slightly brown skin and hear my name, they go, oh, where are you from? And I say, Salt Lake City.
And they
look at me like, no, what race are you?
Yeah.
You know, that's racist.
They think you're going to say, one of those countries.
Right. Well, it's like Aziz Ansari.
Uzbekistan.
Kazakhstan, yes. Aziz Ansari, in a stand-up bit, he's got this thing where some dude at one of those music festivals like Bonnaroo or something, some hippie dude's talking to him. He's like, where are you from, man? And Aziz is all like, I'm from South Carolina.
Yeah, South Carolina.
Yeah. And he's like, well, I don't understand. He's like, well, you know, a lot of people's parents are from different countries and they move here and they have kids and the kids grow up and they watch the same TV shows as regular Americans and so they sound like me. And then I showed him a Vietnamese dude rapping on YouTube and his head exploded.
Well, you know, my friend Little Mike 15 years ago said, the way the world's headed is everybody who's got any tiny bit of brown in their skin from around the world is going to make music that sounds like hip hop. And it's kind of turned out that way.
Mm. Why do you think that is? Why did he think that is?
Because it's kind of like the people's music now. It's accessible. You don't need to have a rock band. You don't need to rent rehearsal space. You don't need to have tons of heavy gear. You could do it in a bedroom. Some of the best hip-hop in the world's done in a bedroom. But back to punk rock, which was the people's music before computers. My friend Little Mike and I were really good friends with Bomber, who was the drummer in RKL, Rich Kids on LSD, and then became the singer. And that guy could play anything. He was really talented, and he was a buddy of mine. And he died from drugs, basically from hepatitis A, B, and C.
Yikes, and he had the whole hepatitis alphabet?
The whole alphabet city, man. Jeez. And I knew him when we were drinking and using, and then I knew him when we were clean. I knew him from NA meetings. And I really liked him. I cried really hard when he died. And fortunately, like, he died at home, I think at his parents' home, like down in Mendocino. There's a video of him on YouTube. Search Bomber, B-O-M-E-R, R-K-L, and there's a video of him that's awesome, playing music and talking. It's not very well filmed. It's, like, really old, you know, like, analog video and then digitized really poorly. But it's really sweet, and it's at least he died at home, you know, around loved ones instead of, like, on the street somewhere where a lot of my friends died.
Right.
And, you know, he was really cool. I remember when my band Bomb broke up, I had this short-lived band called Drive-By Crucifixion. It was kind of a weird metal punk band. And we opened for RKL at the Berkeley Square, and it was a packed house, packed to see them, not us. And he got us on the bill, and we got booed off the stage. It's the only time it's ever happened in my life. It was like a bunch of snot-nosed punks. You know, like, really, their audience, their crowd was really like, and they did not like us, and they were calling us hippies, and they hated us, and we did not finish our set. It's the only time I've ever done that.
You got booed off the stage?
Yeah, I mean, my band Bomb opened up for Flotsam and Jetsam, which is the band that the bass player in Metallica that replaced the dead guy came from, and they were like a major label serious metal band, and there were like 900 people there to see them in Chicago, and there were like 10 people to see my band up front, and we were getting booed, and we played because we were like on tour. We were like a well-oiled machine. We were like, I don't care if you don't like us, we're gonna play. And we played our butt off, and we converted about 50 of them. And by the end of it, the people that were booing had gone to the bar. We were just like, F you, man. We're just going to play. And we played, and we were so incredibly great and just steamrolling that we just bowled them over and played anyway. But later, you know, Drive-By Crucifixion wasn't as good, and I was kind of at the pinnacle of my depths of heroin addiction and not very strong spiritually or emotionally or physically, and just like, you know, they booed us for three songs, and they saying get off the stage, and we did. Actually, I think the club asked us, you know, like the stage manager came over and was like, okay, guys, this is the last song. And, but Bomber, like, actually apologized to me for his crowd, man, and he gave me a hug and was like, man, I'm really sorry that they did that. And I'm like, hey, it's not your fault.
Yeah.
But he felt bad. And, you know, three guys from that band died. He died at home from Hep A, B, and C. He was a Hep cat. And one of the guys died in Mexico while being treated for heroin addiction with Ibogaine. We've talked about that before. I guess it was done wrong or something. He also had, like, you know, sepsis or something. And then another guy killed himself in that band. Those guys were lethal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, rock and roll was dangerous, man. Yeah.
They left, like, their rich parents in town in Montecito to go, like, starve and be gutter punks in San Francisco. They had the best album title, and it totally fit what they did. It was called Riches to Rags.
Nice. Well, that's a weird sentiment. I feel like a lot of suburban, middle American, I know, I guess I kind of want to say white kids, but I bet it transcends race. But a lot of people in that sort of middle class suburban chunk sort of have a romantic vision of what it's like to be, you know, either a poor gangsta from the ghetto and such like that. I mean,
yeah,
actually, I don't know. I kind of grew up with both things on me. Like, my dad was always really well off and lived in suburban parts of Utah or Salt Lake City. And my mom, you know, at some points we you know, we were kind of down on our luck, and, you know, it wasn't like I was in poverty or anything, but, man, I don't know. I guess I never understood that desire to be in a different class, at least a class lower than the one you're in now.
I had a really good quote for that. It's for my first novel, and it's this guy Cash Newman, who is a starving artist, but also a really good artist. It's basically me if I never got clean. And he said, for every people romanticize the idea of going slowly mad in a garrison or, you know, killing yourself while making great art, and it's BS. And for every truly great junkie or drunk like Burroughs or Bukowski, there's a thousand junkies dying in the gutter with a half finished novel in their dirty backpack, claiming to be artists.
Yeah, yeah, that's true, man. Or at least it seems true.
It is, man. I knew
a study like that, you know.
I came up out of that. You know, I left a middle class existence with my parents. You know, broken home, but middle class existence. Never missed a meal until I left home. Left home like 3 months after my 18th birthday. Went to D.C. Starved. Literally was homeless. And it wasn't like I'm homeless, woe is me. I was kind of celebrating it because it was a new experience, and I guess I was guilty of everything I said in that quote, and that quote was probably directed at me, you know, 15 years later with a lot more experience under my belt. And Bukowski once said something, and he was the ultimate starving artist. I mean, he worked, but he would work enough to, you know, pay for a pee in the sink hotel room for a couple months and then just drink. And then he'd go out and work again doing construction or whatever. And then he worked for the post office for a while. And eventually, you know, after like 40 years of it, he got recognized and started making a living. And then he lived probably 25 years of it. And then he had about 20 years where he was making good money selling books and having books turned into movies. And then he died. He died pretty old for an alcoholic. He died at like 77 or something. But he said the image of the starving artist is BS. He said, I can write better in a good hotel room after eating a nice steak than I ever could when I was starving.
So is it just that people don't understand the causation of where art comes from, and they confuse the fact that you have to be in a gutter and miserable for the fact that some people suffer for their art? It's kind of like a wet sidewalks cause rain kind of a thing.
Right.
Like they just get the causation backwards.
Exactly. That's brilliant, Nima Vedati. It's basically people who put their art before everything tend to starve. And people who want to be an artist and idealize it but aren't really great artists in their heart get it backwards. And they think, well, if I go live a life of starving and doing drugs, you know, like I've actually known people who started doing drugs because some rock star or writer they liked did. You know, they never would have otherwise, but it was like, oh, you know, Keith Richard is a heroin addict. Perry Farrell's a heroin addict. Bukowski's
Let's try
a heroin,
heroin
addict. Yeah. Yeah. Right. The heroin doesn't make you a good writer. The heroin is kind of despite it. And I mean, I guess for a lot of people, like, substances slow their a lot of artists have minds that are constantly churning, and I do, and I took heroin and drank to kind of slow the thoughts down to where I could grasp a few of them and deal with them to their logical conclusion, and that worked for a few decades until it started killing me.
Right. And non-artists slow their mind down by working office jobs. I mean, that's what numbs their mind, is they spend 8 hours in a cubicle doing mundane tasks.
Yeah, and some of the greatest writers and thinkers ever worked in offices. I mean, you can do it. Who's the guy that wrote the cockroach book? The one where the guy turns into a cockroach. Metamorphosis. Kafka. Kafka worked in an office, which is why the term Kafkaesque often refers to like a labyrinth-like soul-crushing office, because he wrote all his great books while working in one. Yeah, and then you know, Einstein worked at the patent office. Can you imagine a great mind like that? You know, dealing with bureaucracy and statism. Well, he was a statist, but you know, dealing with bureaucracy and dealing with like he's envisioning and figuring out how the universe works before anybody did. And his day job is, you know, looking at blueprints of widgets.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we all need to have pot boilers at one time or another. And I don't know, maybe if you're really successful and really rich at some things, you don't have that passion to seek out making or creating something great. And I guess that different people have different motivations, and I'm not trying to make a judgment call like one way is better than the other, but I don't know, for me,
that's why RKL had to leave Montecito.
Is it? Okay.
I think so.
Well, I guess for me, when I envisioned myself, I always fantasized about the things I was doing and creating, and never about the result of that. Never about, I'm going to drive the best car and have the wife with the biggest tits and the giantest house,
boobies,
and a pool,
boobies,
in the backyard.
Boobies.
You know, I always imagined,
boobies.
Well,
boobies.
Boobies. Oh, you were telling me
we're
not
practicing
to,
okay, for radio. Right. Boobies.
Boobies.
Hooray for boobies.
The T word is just so, I don't know, but okay, fair enough. Boobies. The wife with,
hey man,
the
we're on
knockers,
radio like a month from today.
I know.
We're practicing.
Okay, practice. Anyway.
Although we will have a kill switch, I found out.
We will.
We'll have an internet accessible kill switch, but I don't want
to. So we can kill the boobies.
I don't want to have to use it. I wish it would just replace with the fiend drone sound, but I don't know if they could set that up.
Fiend drone. No, probably not. But yeah, man, I always just thought of like, I'll be famous for doing this or that, or people will love my rap album, or people will love to see me on TV or hear me on radio, or people will love to read that thing that I wrote or listen to that idea that I had. So the motivation for me, and I think for artists, that's it, right? The motivation is to communicate something you thought up inside of you, or something you felt up inside of you, and share that with the rest of the world and have other people identify with it enough to like it to where it becomes popular. And if that makes you money, then great. But if not, then, you know, that's what you want more than the Camry and the office job and the three kids that go to soccer practice.
Well, that's another quote from Cash Newman from my first novel. Right before he dies at the end, spoiler alert, actually he dies on the first page, but then it's all flashback. And you don't know, he died of a drug overdose, and you don't know if it was intentional or accidental. I left that questionable because I had some friends who you didn't know. Like one was Justin from a band called Lithium Milkshake, if there's any old San Francisco people out there. Great name.
Tasty.
For a band.
Which would have been okay under the soda ban.
Yeah, he was found dead in his rehearsal space at Lennon Studio, where we used to have NA meetings in the same room, man. And nobody knows whether it was suicide or not. You know, he was just found with a syringe in his arm and dead of a heroin overdose. So sometimes you don't know, but there's a quote from Cash Newman. He says, "It's all about art. Whether you're painting the ceiling of the chapel or banging out three shaky chords in the garage, you are expressing a need to smear yourself on the veil of the infinite."
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I guess it's all about that for some people, for artists.
I would definitely agree with you that real artists don't care about the result. Like, I think what we're doing is art, and I think we would be doing it still after 2 years if we had 5 fans instead of 5,000 fans.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we're getting on radio, because we taking that attitude with it. Jimi Hendrix said, find yourself and then your art, you know, and I found myself a long time ago, but I'm still finding myself, and so are you.
Right.
Well,
in rap music and hip hop, there's this line or motif of all about the money, F the fame. Like Tupac says it, so many people say it, like it's all about the money. But if you're all about the money, you know, trying to be the most famous rapper is probably not a good way to go, because for every Tupac or ASAP Rocky or Kendrick Lamar, you know, there's a million Nima Vedatis out there.
Well,
or
I'd
whatever your little local rapper is that's backpacking selling CDs for $5, you know?
I like the F the fame and the all about the money. I don't have a problem with it, but I would bet that most people who say that, it's not even all about the money. It's probably all about the lifestyle, which can include the money, but also about the art. You know, I really doubt there is a rapper out there who's any good, whether we've heard of him or not, who, when he comes up with a great new track and finishes it, isn't just bouncing off the walls going, this is a great track. He may be saying, this is going to make me rich and famous, but he's probably just also digging that he made a great track, you know?
Yeah, I'm feeling myself, yeah.
Like, I've always said that I make the art that doesn't exist. Like, for instance, the band Bomb was really different from a lot of any bands that were out there. And we were really good at it. And while we were really incredibly egotistical as people, we were pretty modest about the music. Like, we really worked hard in practice. I mean, immensely hard. And I've carried that tradition on over to doing this. And we didn't, it was kind of like, if that band had existed already, I probably would have been their roadie or their engineer or something. Because I wasn't in that band so much to be a band in a band. I was in that band because it produced music I listened to nonstop. And
yeah.
I would, you know, like Sean Divali, he has projects and stuff that he does, but he says he's kind of like that with us. Like he's our roadie. He's our, you know, our Doug Stamford on House of Cards.
Yeah. Well, he sure is awesome at it too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had to go pet Charlie because she was wheezing in her sleep, and I had to pet her so she'd start purring.
A wheezy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's going, yeah. But getting back to the, you know, what is the act of creating art? Is it the creation or is it the fame and fortune you get? I'd take it even further to that to say, what is art? Is it the creation or is it the product? Because I think right now we're making art. And I think that the podcast that we upload is just a record of that art. And I think that the act of painting a great painting is the art. And I think that the painting is just kind of the receipt for that having happened.
Hmm. Why?
Because it sounds really cool and chicks dig it.
There you go. Because it sounds awesome, like I'm all meta.
Because it sounds deep. I believe it too. And I think that's why some artists who are great don't get famous, even if they aren't their own worst enemies, like my band Bomb were, because they don't want to do the same painting over and over and over. Like a really good example is, you know, I made that movie DIY or Die, How to Survive as an Independent Artist. And everybody was, you know, I was like, what do I do next? And I was kind of bored and tired of making a film and working on it 90 hours a week for a year and a half. And I was like, I'm going to write books. So I wrote books and made some music. And, you know, it was 5 years before I made another film. And then I made the Selby movie and it got even more attention. And some people in Hollywood who know what they're talking about, who I met through that film, said, you need to immediately make another documentary film. And I'm like, I don't feel like it. That one almost killed me. I want to write some books and make some music and do some podcasting. And, you know, it was 5 years more before I made another film with you, the Guns and Weed movie. If I were smart, I would have taken more of a careerist pattern to it. I'd probably still be in LA. I probably wouldn't be a libertarian. I probably wouldn't have guns. I probably wouldn't have met my wife. I probably would be in the rat race, you know, making stuff for PBS with government grants and having people tell me what to do with my art.
Would you be happy though?
In a way, but probably not as happy as I am now.
Okay.
I'd have more money. I wouldn't have to beg for, you know, money to buy equipment. I'd write a government grant for it and get it.
There you go. Well, I don't know. I guess I have issues with it. I get where you're coming from, but I don't know if the actual creation of the art is the art itself, because, or maybe it's half of it, because the other half is when it's consumed, isn't it? I mean, it's a 1-2 punch. There's the sender and the receiver. And when I listen to, you know, a Kendrick Lamar song or something, and it hits me hard, he doesn't know who I am. He doesn't know that I'm listening to it. He doesn't understand that at all. That is of no consequence to him. But it might be something really deep and meaningful to me. But then again, maybe that's just the container. Maybe the song's the container that sends his art to me. But again, I experience it completely subjectively. You know, I don't experience the same thing necessarily that he wanted the listener to experience.
That container thing is kind of important, and I've actually come up with that term independently. When I first started podcasting, I almost envisioned an MP3 as like something I could hold in my hand and hand to people I didn't know.
Right.
And I guess you can, because like you can hold an iPod in your hand and it's got a bunch of MP3s on it. But the first time I felt that way was with the drug LSD. Like, it was so mind-changing to me when I was 14 and I took it. And the pill was so small. It was like the size of a saccharin tablet. And it felt like the sacrament. It felt like, you know, take, eat, this is my body, this is my blood, which is shed for you.
Body of Jerry.
And I didn't feel that way again until I was podcasting. And to me, an MP3... Of a podcast of me and my wife talking for an hour or an hour and a half and people downloading it, to me that felt like, you know, take, eat, this is my body, And it was the container. And I do see the record idea of it, or the thing you're saying, of because I've said before that I do art to communicate with other people, and I can prove that, because if I only did it for my own pleasure, the only music I'd ever make is like tuneless
feedback sounds
on the guitar, because that's more fun than taking the time to work and write a song with a verse and a chorus and a hook. And the same thing with podcasting. I mean, like, you know, you and I talk on the phone, Ben and I talk on the phone, and a lot of times we say like, hey, we should record this, but our talks are a little different and more free form on those on the phone calls that aren't recorded than the podcasts are. Like, we, I have notes for this. You have notes. We don't have notes when we talk.
Although often we don't look at our notes during a podcast.
Yeah.
I haven't even opened, I guess the document's open, but I haven't read anything from it yet.
Well, let's take a break and go sell some things.
All right, let's do that.
A science fiction comic adventure from Big Head Press. Quantum Vibe. It's year 2523. There are colonies on Venus, Mars, and Mercury. People travel in bubbles, fly at hyperspeed, with brain implants and artificial gravity. Scientific genius and his clever assistant set out on an adventure through the solar system on a secret mission to find the key to access new frontiers and save liberty. Quantum Vibe. There's a robot girl and zany creatures made with genetically engineered features, and corporate villains crave the opportunity to steal a profit from mother's ingenuity. A scientific genius and his clever assistant set out on an adventure through the solar system on a secret mission to find the key to access new frontiers and save liberty. QuantumVibe.com.
Hi, I'm Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends, and like you, I'm concerned with privacy on the internet. The electronic police state is strangling our previous protections, and the central scrutinizer is trying to squint into all areas of our lives. That's why smart people surf the net with a VPN or virtual private network. I use a VPN from Bola VPN. Bola VPN has your utmost security in mind and will allow you to surf, email, and do other computing tasks without leaving a trail of breadcrumbs across the internet. Unlike many other VPN providers, Bola VPN doesn't log traffic. With Bola VPN, you can change your apparent location or disappear completely. Bola VPN has been around since 2007, which is OG in the VPN world. Bola VPN is easy to install and configure. Best of all, it can be had for less than 25 cents a day, which is a small price to pay for this much security. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them through the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. I've been on the World Wide Web since its inception in 1994. I've tried dozens of web providers in that time. The only one that hasn't broken my heart is HostGator. HostGator has unlimited server space, unlimited throughput, and a guaranteed uptime of better than 99.9% for only $150 a year. You can pay a little less elsewhere, but you'll pull out your hair dealing with anyone else. HostGator has great service and unlimited tech support, only a phone call away, 24/7, 365. HostGator is where pros like the Fiends host, because we know how to do it right. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the HostGator affiliate link on the right sidebar to sign up today.
Roland. Hi, Nima Vidotti.
Are we rolling? Ah, yes. Yeah. We're back on the Freedom Fiends.
Yeah, for the second half of this very special short one-hour Fiends cast, because we've been stealing time from the Fiends to fix gear to get us on radio.
Radio. Were we stealing it, or are we going to give you... I guess we can't give you your time back, so we can't borrow time.
No, but I did book Ben today for two shows when you're going to be out of town on a cruise.
Ah, yes.
Yeah.
I am going to be on a cruise. Yeah. I'm nervous about the cruise. I really appreciate...
I'm nervous that you're going to get, like, stuck and, you know...
Oh, wouldn't that be awful?
Be out there the day we're supposed to go on radio, which, you know what I would do? I'd get Ben on, and we'd talk about you, and we'd try to get you to call in on the phone.
Ah,
Because that would be such big news that we would have the scoop, man.
Right, right. Well, we didn't... We didn't actually end up getting passports, and the agency, this cruise agency, said it's fine, you know, just bring your birth certificate and your government ID, your driver's license. But I think there's some literature in there that says, you know, the problem would be if we did get stranded or something. It's going to be a lot harder to get you back to the mainland because you don't have a passport. I'm just thinking, man, the state literally makes everything so much harder with these physical pieces of paper you need, you know, like the whole where are your papers, sir, and you must have the right paperwork. It's so outdated. And my wife and me were talking about this the other day, and I hate to be ageist, but, you know, I really feel like people who are stuck to ideas of having certain pieces of paper or paperwork with you, and if you don't have that physical copy of the paper, then it doesn't count and you're doing something wrong. Like the cop the other day who pulled me over and asked if I had my proof of insurance. I'm like, no, I didn't print it out yet, man, but we got it. You know, last time the cop just searched for it in his database, and he, like, yelled at me. He was like, I know I can search for it. I know, but the law says you have to have the piece of paper in your car. And I'm like, I'm sorry, man, I don't have it. That you yelling at me is not going to make the paper print out from my dashboard. You know, that
doesn't happen. And I kind of feel like yelling at you and saying, like, well, I think that's an anarchist punk attitude that's not realistic, because – you are in that world, in this world, and they do want that stuff. And you know.
I know, but we're here. We're here to let people know that there is another way.
So I guess the answer is to have the papers and complain about it. That's what I would do.
It is. That is 100% the answer. And I am complaining about it, and I'm doing that function of it now. I did print out the paperwork, and I do have it now. You know, I'm keeping pristine so that the state has less of an excuse to harass me. But, man, I mean, with everything else, it's all paperless now. And not even from a green sense, like, oh, we need to not kill the trees. I guess that's kind of a concern for some people. But the thing is, really, that the constraints of physical property, of physical pieces of paper to prove things, is completely outdated. And you have to be old, and you have to be the dinosaur thrashing in the tar pits. You have to be the state to still rely on those models.
I used to have a job as it was kind of the longest term temp job I had. It was like 8 months or something. I was actually taking the place of an administrative assistant who was on medical leave going to, like, alcohol treatment, and then, like, you know, probably going on a cruise afterwards at government paycheck to recover from her alcoholism. Whereas, you know, F that, it's like, I got clean and I went and got a job, you know, and you got clean and you just went to your job and then went to your whatever and went to your job, you know, you never stopped. Can I mention that? Is that too soon?
Too soon. Too soon.
That's good. That's good. Because I, you know, there's always that problem with celebrities who get sober and then do interviews about it, and then either either relapse and make themselves and the program look bad, or just, you know, like, they sound religious about it, and who wants to hear that?
Exactly. That's not what we're here for. We're here to complain about the state, man.
But anyway, like, so I would complain about the state. I worked for the vice president, like the top VP of the San Francisco Convention and Visitors Bureau, who actually own the phrase, I left my heart in San Francisco. If you put that on a t-shirt, you owe them money and you have to get permission.
You can own that phrase.
Yep. I think, and they own Tony Bennett too, because he performed that song at all their, I don't know if they gave him a dump truck full of money or if they had some, like, pictures he didn't want anyone to see, but, he was their boy. But, I was like the assistant to the assistant to this guy, and this guy was like high level. I mean, he flew around in corporate jets and represented the city internationally and, you know, met with rock stars and movie stars and basketball players and endorsers and things like that. And I was the assistant to him, but mainly the assistant to his assistant. And his assistant was, you know, probably 60. And she printed out every email that he received. And one of their big initiatives, this is like 15 years ago, they were all about the green stuff, you know, like the green energy, green everything. This is a green office. And I'm like, yeah, except for that like 4 foot high pile of emails you print out every week. Everything. If it was like, you know, lower your mortgage, click here, she would print that out for him.
Wow.
I don't think he even wanted it. I think she did that to like keep track of it. But that was so not green.
My wife tells a story about she was working at this company, and they hired a new secretary, and the secretary was older. Like, she had had kids, and then her kids grew up, and then she decided to get back into the workforce. So she was in her 50s or 60s or something. And she hadn't worked in a while because she was a stay-at-home mom or worked little small odd jobs then. And what she would do things just like that. Like, one time somebody called and asked her to take a message and give it to somebody else in the company. And they were in a building that was across the parking lot. And so what this woman did was wrote down with the pen on a piece of paper the message and then walked it over there. Now the company has set up instant messages to where you can just click on the person's name and type it and press enter. You could also email it to that person. But no, she wrote it down on a piece of paper and walked, got out of her desk and asked somebody to cover the front desk for her while she did this.
You know, there's a very interesting thing with non-paperless offices, bookies, you know, people who illegally take bets. That doesn't harm anybody, but, you know, they probably break arms sometimes if they don't get paid when they're owed. But that's also a contract that you verbally sign because you know that's the deal going in.
Yeah.
They historically, they might do it with computers and encryption now, but historically they have written every bet down on a piece of paper with some kind of code of who the person is and, you know, how much the money is. But they would do it either on flash paper or on rice paper. Flash paper is what magicians use to create the illusion of, you know, making fire in their hands. It's paper that's soaked with some kind of nitrate thing. And it's really easy to burn. And rice paper dissolves in water. So either of these kinds of paper, they have a really quick way to get rid of it. They can burn it or throw it in a bucket of water and it dissolves.
Huh. Okay.
And they do that anyway, even when they're not being raided, you know, at the end of the day after the bets are paid out.
So paper is the state and everything else if you're down.
Yeah. And, you know, the state would have you believe that, you know, the things they say that are good just blow my mind. You know, like, we're blowing up brown people, but we have a new paperless system at the White House. I heard a really great liberal commentator talking about drones, and this is something I think everyone should say to all their lefty friends. David Serrata, who is he's a liberal, but he's kind of a different kind of liberal. Like, he's complained a lot. He put Bill Clinton in the same class as George Bush. You know, he didn't like Bill Clinton for the same reasons he didn't like George Bush. He doesn't like neoliberalism, I guess is the term. But he said, it is a form of elite white privilege to not care about a drone war that's disproportionately killing non-white people. Put that in your hippie peace pipe and smoke it.
There you go. Yeah, I saw that tweet a few days ago. I think Justin Raimondo or Scott Horton retweeted it and thought, I guess I'm already against the drone war, so it wasn't like, wow, mind blown to me. But I could see telling that to some of my liberal friends because they get into this mode when Obama's the one killing people that they're like, you know, it's really time to focus inside our borders and focus on making things right here at home. What good is it if you're letting gay people get married and letting women join the military if what they're doing is, you know,
killing people.
When in the military is killing non-white people, is killing the other,
non-combatants. I mean, even if you want to put on your minarchist hat and argue there are people in the world the state should kill, you know, let's try to wrap our head around that for a sec. But, you know, a lot of people believe that. If you believe that, you have to look at the fact that 80% of the people being killed by drones over in that part of the world are bystanders. 20% right. of them are people who are believed to be combatants. And George Bush was more ethical than Obama, which isn't saying much. We're not sticking up for Bush. We think he's horrible. We think he was horrible. He still is. But George Bush's drone war, first of all, didn't kill as many people. Second of all, pretty much only targeted people they knew the names of and had a dossier on. Obama is killing people for things like being a male between 17 and 30, carrying
doing jumping jacks
or carrying a rifle in the desert. I mean,
yeah.
You're in that age group and fit the physical profile and carry a gun in the desert sometimes when you're out shooting.
I sure do. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, I can't tell though if that's, you know, Obama sent a directive or this happened because of Obama or if it's just the natural evolution of it that
I think obviously it's that.
Obama's is too milquetoast to stop or stand up against.
I mean, can you imagine if that other white-haired Republican guy had become president? What's his name?
McCain.
Speaker of the House guy. Or McCain.
Speaker of the House guy.
The guy that was
Newt Gingrich.
Newt Gingrich, yeah. The old Speaker of the House. I mean, that guy was like Reagan's right-hand man. Can you imagine if Reagan were president and had drones? Although, in a way, he does, even though he's dead. Because, I'll say it again, I think the drone war is the natural evolution of Reagan's undoable SDI system, his strategic defense initiative. He wanted to have a constellation of satellites that could either use a laser or bombs to target anything and spy on everything from the sky, from way up there in orbit. And that couldn't be done. It was vaporware. It was, you know, money was put toward it and research and development was done and they ended up with drones.
Yeah. Okay, I could buy that. I mean, I don't see the exact trail there, but
you're having news.
Makes sense to me, man.
You're having Newsheimers. We did a half an episode on this about a year ago.
That's not Newsheimers. I mean, I'm saying I can buy that. I'm saying
I just wanted to say Newsheimers.
It's not like we have a direct, documentation of the Star Defense Initiative eventually became the drone program.
But although it might have. I mean, I think that the drone program is a direct lineage of whatever happened in the 50s at Area 51 because they said, you know, one of the counter conspiracy theories to it, you know, basically it's believed and popularly repeated that aliens crashed in the 50s in, I mean, even like the movie Independence Day, they show the aliens in it. But what really probably happened, people said they saw lights in the sky that were behaving in a way that planes couldn't. It was probably some kind of experimental aircraft, you know, that could like a jet that could launch vertically or something, which was unheard of in the 50s, you know, and it could like hover or whatever. But what happened was that one of those crashed and a nurse who was not military was called in to help with an autopsy of the crashed pilots and wasn't told what was going on. They were burnt to a crisp with their helmets still glued to their head. And they looked like the popular depiction of aliens, you know, like hairless, kind of formless, oval head, big eyes, whatever. You know, she was looking at the corpses of Air Force guys who'd been burned in a pile of jet fuel. But she did a report and then somebody else did a report and picked up on it. And the newspaper said, you know, alien autopsy at Area 51. And I think the Air Force and the U.S. government is fine with people believing that because it covered up what they were doing without them having to do a cover up. You know, the conspiracy theorists covered it up. But that area has always been top secret Air Force research and development. And I think that the drones came out of that. I think it's taken, you know, 60 years. But drones, Area 51. No conspiracy at all. No like metaphysical otherworldly conspiracy. Just secrecy.
Right. Yeah, and I mean, I guess. Well, I don't know. I don't even know, man. I don't even know.
Well,
I just,
this is M Dub, a fiend called Michael. And if we want to talk more about transparency, and because it sounds like you're at a bubble mind fart, I just pigeoned you something really good. It's about transparency at the World Bank.
Okay. see. The World Bank collects and processes large amounts of data and generates them on the basis of economic models. These data and models have gradually been made available to the public in a way that encourages reuse, whereas the recent publications describing them are available as open access under a Creative Commons attribution license, for which the bank received the Spark Innovator 2012 award.
Our lies are open source, and you can share them without paying us. Where's the gold? I want to see the gold.
Does the World Bank have gold? Don't they keep it all in the New York Fed?
The New York Fed has a great article about how they're taking care of our gold, but a lot of people believe it's gone. And there are other countries that have gold stored there that want it back. And the
Germany,
The bank is the Fed is saying like, give us a couple years. We have to clean it. It's out for cleaning.
I think Germany said they would allow a couple of years in the presupposition that the Fed needed to do some house cleaning, so to speak, to make sure that they could get all their gold back, and did it as good faith thing to help the United States save face as kind of a negotiating thing, like, you know, a position of, hey, don't worry, we know that you're screwing everything up, but if you still give us our gold within the next 10 years, we won't say a peep, you know, just give us our gold.
That's pretty pretty nice of them. I mean, can you imagine someone owing you a couple $1 trillion and you asking for it back, or at least to look at it, and them saying, give me a couple years, I'll get back to you, and you go, well, okay.
The thing about governments, especially Western governments, especially governments that are members of NATO or a part of the quote-unquote coalition, they're all in it together, man. I mean, they're buddies. You know, they all play the same game of being states and doing the violent monopoly things that states do. So, of course, Germany realizes that maybe in the future they'll be in a position where they've screwed a bunch of people over financially or other states over financially. And so it's kind of like a good faith thing, like you Americans have gotten into a little bit of trouble, huh? Remember this. Remember this when we're getting into trouble, and you need your gold back from us.
Could you hear that clinking?
Yeah, it was really annoying.
Yeah, it's silver.
What is it?
Fiends come out and play. It's silver. Yeah. It's 10 ounces of silver, 2 5-ounce bars being clicked together.
Okay, great.
Yeah. So yeah. I got a good thing to talk about. It might take us the rest of the time. I just pigeoned you something. It's about standards, which I spell with a Z.
I did see this.
Yeah.
Right.
Basically, people who do pirate releases don't just throw it up there. They actually have standards, and they are decided by ad hoc groups of people who may not even meet each other. It's done over the internet. But it kind of shows how, in the lack of government regulation or even like top-down corporate organizing, amazing things can get done to produce something of high quality for no money. Why don't you read a little bit of this?
Yeah. Well, first you have to know what wares are, because the standards thing says standards in the wares, which is WARZ scene.
Pirated software.
That's pirated software. So say you want, I don't know, Final Cut Pro or Premiere or some fancy software that would cost you $500 and you're broke, but you want to learn how to video edit.
Yeah.
You can get a wares. You can get a
cracked
version.
We do not recommend breaking the law. The fiends are law-abiding.
We're just saying if you were so inclined, you could do that.
We'll just say people do it. People do it.
People do it. There you go.
Bad people. Bad people.
And now these people that actually make the cracks, they can form committees and they create drafts for approval of the groups that actually end up distributing the crack software. So sort of an underground black or maybe even colorless, since it's all digital, in the colorless market of software cracking, they meet together and all groups are expected to know and follow the standards. And these are technical standards. So if you're doing a video, you know, high definition video, it's supposed to be a certain aspect ratio, a certain quality, a certain source material. You know, the same kind of standards that people like the FCC say you would not have without a government monopoly.
That's
you
the have point. That's the point.
In this colorless black market, this thing that exists nowhere but in the ether and amongst the messages people send back and forth to each other and the feedback they give. Because the thing about where you get these wares is if somebody does something outside of the standards or somebody puts up something bunk or of a bad quality, then you'll notice it before you click the download button, because you can look at all the comments and people will say, hey, that file doesn't work, or hey, doesn't work with this encode, or doesn't work with this codec. You know, these are things that market or voluntary interaction take care of, and take care of really well. I think I don't know if I've ever got well. I don't know if I've heard of many horror stories of people using this kind of stuff. Have you?
No. And all those, like, don't copy that floppy rap videos that the RIAA and the DHS produce warn you that you will, you know, if goons aren't going to kick in your door, at least it's going to destroy your computer. I've right. never gotten a virus from, oh, wait, I don't do that. I don't know anyone who's ever gotten a virus from downloading wares. If they're careful, and there's actually a rating system, like on Pirate Bay. If you get the stuff that has a little skull next to it, little skull and crossbones, either the pink one or the green one or the other color ones, those are different levels of, like, these people produce good stuff and never bunk stuff. And
right.
and a lot of times, though, with key generators, antivirus programs like Norton will say there's a virus and remove it. And there's not. Ah. You actually have to, like, disable your antivirus, I've been told, to use that kind of stuff. Because basically they're starting to label wares as viruses.
Yeah, man. I mean, and I guess that's the back and forth that we go back to earlier when we were talking about keeping paper on file. You know, that's kind of what one of the things I think wares, it's in the same realm of using the digital world to allow way more freedom than the cluttered old style models would ever allow for or ever co-sign. And so I think as people who want to see a free world in our future, it's good to say things, it's good to talk about things like this and throw our moral cosign behind the people who do these kinds of things and say thank you for, you know, setting up a system of standards as well to prove that you don't need a gun to have standards.
Throw up your moral cosign.
Yeah, boy.
Wave it in the air like you just don't care. I'm buying computers right now.
And by have a gun to you know, have standards, I don't mean you shouldn't. It's not a gun control thing. I mean the gun of the state. You don't need to have.
I want to have gun control on the gun of the state, man.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Me too. what do you think? There was a town in Maine that actually the city council is voting on a proposal to require everyone to carry a gun. Now, it wouldn't have any teeth to it. Like, the goons wouldn't come in and kick down your door to see if you had a gun.
Well,
supposedly.
I like it better than laws that are the opposite that have teeth. But, you know, it's them making a line in the sand. But there are people who have religious objections to carrying weapons. Are you going to make them do it? I mean, even the Wyoming State Constitution, which says that every male and female over the age of 17 and below the age of, I think, 60 is a member of the state militia. There is an exception in it for people who have a religious objection to carrying a weapon.
Right, right. And it kind of does sum up the problem that that the state can't solve these kinds of social or moral issues. They can't. They can say you must do this or you can't do this. And failure to do the must or failure to prevent yourself from doing the can't will lead to consequences. That's all the state can do. So, yeah, I mean, using your city council to say we all must carry a gun, that doesn't solve any problem at all.
It
would create new problems.
Yeah, you know, I saw an interesting thing the other day was a state Supreme Court judge of the state of New York has overturned the soda ban that the bantastic mayor and king of New York City and state Bloomberg has put in.
And, you know, when I read that and even before when I heard that a judge was going to hear it, I thought, well, you know, this could be a really good thing because if depending on how the judge strikes it down and if he does strike it down, that could be a good precedent for saying that the state can't impose its social constructs on a society and force people to do this thing or that thing or not do this thing or that thing. But not at all. The judge actually said that it doesn't have the power of law because the city council didn't pass it, because only the health board passed it. And he said in order to have a law like this, you would have to have the whole city council pass it. So he didn't take exception to it, you know, on a moral basis, but mostly on a procedural basis and on a loophole basis. His other argument was that there's too many loopholes. Like, you can have milkshakes and you can have lattes that have more sugar than the sodas and are bigger, but you can't have the sodas. He thought it was kind of favoring some companies over others. So,
and in his opinion, he said basically that people should be able to pass laws on smoking in public, like Bloomberg. You know, he basically said, well, that one makes sense because cigarettes harm everybody, but not everybody who drinks a lot of soda at one, you know, drinks one big cup of soda is harmed by it.
Right. So the state arbitrator was arbitrary. Oh, how surprising. But yeah, I mean, that's just it, right? He didn't strike it down from any kind of first principle or moral basis. He just said, well, smoking's cool because we already do it. And, you know, you could ban sodas, but you just have to get the city council to vote on it instead of the health board.
I don't know that he said smoking's cool. He said banning smoking's cool.
Oh, banning smoking's cool.
Yeah.
Either way, though, it's a judge up there saying what's appropriate or not based on, you know, the structure of something that lawyers wrote a long time ago.
That's so square.
So square, man. So square. And it all goes back to property ownership, man. I mean, that's where it all goes back to. If I own a piece of property, then whatever I say on it goes. I have the ability to destroy it if I want. And like the guy in Molossia, you know, if I don't want anything from Texas on my property, fair enough. Who's going to tell me no? I own it. Nobody else owns
it. That guy was funny, man. That was a fun interview.
Yeah. He was a statist, guy.
He was a statist. I mean, the last thing he said was, "Yeah, I'm really proud of what I've done. You know, I've made a lot of people think about things. I've gotten a lot of people, young people, interested in participating in politics in their area." And I'm like, "Ugh, that's the opposite of what you should be the result of what you're doing. You should get a bunch of young people saying, I want to secede and start my own country."
Yeah,
but he makes it clear he hasn't seceded because, you know, like Nestlandia and what's your country called?
The anarchic oligarchy of Vidowskistan.
Vidowskistan? That's changed a little bit. You put more of your wife's name in there.
Vidowskistansky.
Vidowskistan. I like that.
Vidowskistan. Yeah, I think I like that better now, too. Okay.
Was that a mistake? Like you just said that for the first time now?
No, we've thought about, instead of hyphenating her last name, to change it to like a mix of the two and have it be Vidowski instead of Romanowski Vidotti, because it's kind of a mouthful and doesn't fit on a debit card.
It doesn't? They have a character limit and you've gone over it by marrying?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Right.
Man, and that's more, I don't know if that's the state, but that's kind of like, that's really old school. That's probably based on, you know, there used to be a 16 character limit in computers, and that's probably a throwback to that.
Maybe.
I mean, you know, if you want to talk about throwbacks of old technology, like the numbers at the bottom of the check are written in that 60s style blocky computer lettering. That's because back then that was the only font that was machine
read digitally.
Yeah, that could be optically read, and now optical software can read pretty much
handwriting.
But they still use that kind of clunky 60s style computer font, machine readable font.
And that, I guess that kind of brings us to something we've discussed personally in one of those phone calls that we're like, we should be recording. but, you know, on weekends, right? All the state agencies, the things that the state runs, or the things that is close to being state run, like the banks, are all closed down. And I was wondering, how would that be in LibPair? Could you apply for a loan and talk to a loan officer on a Saturday in LibPair?
Ah, good point. Now, did we finish with standards?
Well, this kind of is a standard,
okay,
isn't it?
Yeah. We talked about this, and this was a good conversation. I think it would go both ways. Like, a lot of the reasons things are closed on Saturday and Sunday is because of the government. But I also think in LibPair, a lot of people would still want to have a 5-day work week with 2 days off because that's what they're used to.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, kind of like a bad money after good. What's the bad money rule?
Grisham's law.
Yeah, people, you know, when an economy collapses, people will still spend the currency one to another because it's what they're used to.
Well, you were saying post-Berlin Wall, you took a visit to formerly East Germany, didn't you? And you still saw people spending East German money.
Well,
and
trying to give people
it back to you as change.
I saw people trying to hand it to me because I was from out of the country and didn't or they thought I didn't know. I didn't know the first time. You know, I got it. We went to some like Greek falafel place on the road going into Berlin that is in what used to be East Germany. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I bought a falafel and gave him some West German mark paper money and got back a handful of, like, it really light, like, almost tin, like, light aluminum coins, you know, that didn't even feel like they had weight. Like, you know.
Like American coins
steel,
are now.
Well, a steel nickel has weight. These didn't even have weight. And, the you know, we were walking back to the truck, and the German guy that I was with, the West German guy, Berlin, you know, said, "Oh, let me see your change." And he looked at it and he started laughing at me. He's like, "Oh, that's worthless, man. You can't spend that."
Nice.
Yeah, they were trying to get rid of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Gershom's Law, I experienced that. I am subject to it. when I deliver pizzas, you know, somebody hands me like a $20 bill that's really wrinkled or maybe has a corner ripped out of it or some kind of thing where I'm like, this isn't going to last in my wallet if I carry it for a really long time.
Yeah.
Then the next person I meet, if I have to give them change and can use that bill in their change, I will do it.
Yep. Same thing with people ever buy with coins?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Annoying.
People tip with coins, and then they effusively apologize, but I actually don't really mind because I have a bank bag that I can put them in.
Yep. Well, we're getting pretty near the end here. Do you have any closing comments other than everybody should go look at that really funny video on YouTube where someone tried to pay at a Burger King or a McDonald's at the drive-thru, pay for like $10 worth of food with a gold eagle coin that was worth like $1,700 or something.
Is that a new one? I think I've seen one like that before at a Taco Bell.
The lady wouldn't take it and she didn't know what to do with it. I mean, what I would do is I would pull the money out of my pocket and pay for the guy's food and put the coin in my pocket. You might lose your job for it, but it'd still be worth, you know, what an ounce of gold's worth.
I don't think you'd lose your job for that at all. I think it'd be fine. And if the manager said something, I'd give him $100 and be like, here's $100 from the profit I made on that transaction.
Worms. So you got any redemption in the third act here, Nima Vidadi?
Well, I just will say that you know, even though I had an adventure in Stato Land in trying to track down different pieces of paper,
to get your scooter. You and your wife are getting a scooter.
To get my scooter, yeah. And that's part of the redemption is we're getting a scooter so we can be like the fiends on Quadrophenia.
The Quadrophenia.
Yeah.
Who it does not have a happy ending and it's not to be emulated, but one of the good scenes before that happens is the main character and a girl he likes are making love in an alley while there's a riot going on out on the street and police and kids are beating each other up.
Right.
Make love, not riot.
But
or get turned on by the riot.
There you go. But my redemption is, even though I had to spend the better part of a day getting a state-stamped piece of paper to prove that I owned a vehicle.
Trying to scan it, too, and upload it, and it wouldn't work.
It wouldn't work. But the market did help me out. You know, I ended up using the snipping tool to take a screenshot of the digital document on my computer, uploaded it to the private entity that was actually helping me with the loan, and that was fine. You know, I didn't need to fax them something. I didn't need to mail them something. I took a screenshot off of my computer and emailed it to them, and that was it. And in the future, even organizations that are close to the state, I think, are going to move more and more to this. And eventually, it'll be so easy to do this kinds of stuff that people will question more and more, why do we need to pay these 50-year-old women and men to sit in these offices that cost $35 million to build and pay them $16, $18 an hour and pay their retirement? Why do we need to do that when all it takes to get something done is to email it?
Worms.
Worms. Want to contribute to Liberty but short on cash? You can help the Freedom Fiends without even spending a post-1964 dime. Download uTorrent and start seeding Fiends episodes and DVDs to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. There you'll find our Torrent RSS feed and instructions to grab past episodes and automatically download new ones, even while you're away from the computer. You'll also get special episodes of The Fiends and Anarchy Gumbo days or even weeks before regular podcast subscribers who aren't torrenting. Leave your computer on, seeding the torrents while you're at work or asleep. The more people seeding The Fiends,
the more drone-proof we'll be when the boot comes down.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get State Speech is Hate Speech, Anarchy Gumbo, Guns and Weed, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists. It's only $10 for 5 buttons, including shipping. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says Buttons.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty Projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and Anarchy Gumbo and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many Liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
Hello, Freedom Fiends. It's your boy Dean from the U.S. Get the U.S. out my bloodstream. I-O-E and that includes endorphins. No one won't ask permission and I won't say please. Freedom fans, one fact that I gotta make clear.
The Freedom Fiends podcast is covered by a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license. Do what you want with it and spread it around. Tell two friends. Make copies. Email it to everyone you know. Go on the site and comment. This is a conversation. 3 times a week, Michael W. Dean and Nima Vedati share their own unique take on the way the world works and how to find your place in it. Available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Freedom Fiends is proudly syndicated by Alterati.com and the Liberty Radio Network.
Subscribe and tell two friends.
And remember, the only power they have is the power you allow them. We're not saying the Freedom Fiends are the one true path to anarchist liberation, but it's a good one. If you want to put your voluntarist money where your mouth is, consider making a donation to the Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post. Then make a one-time gift via PayPal or set up a monthly contribution of as little as $3. Giving to the Freedom Fiends helps advance education of horizontal liberation throughout the world. The Freedom Fiends. We work hard, so send us some money.